Grosso, golazo! Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Wednesday, May 15th, 2019. Happy birthday, Mama. Okay, it's out of the way. We can start to talk about soccer for this Wednesday. How you doing, Dwayne?
I'm good. Is your mom a big listener of this, or it's just
sometimes
you're putting it out there just in case?
Just in case. She did surprise me a few times while listening to the show. So if you're listening, Mama, happy birthday, and I'll give you a call in a few minutes. But let's talk about soccer for this Wednesday. Tonight, Dwayne, the Canadian Championship, the 2019 version, gets underway. There's a game that I'm going at, of course, York 9 here in Quebec in Blainville to play against AS Blainville. There's, of course, Halifax playing as well. There's a few games tonight, so go ahead, Dwayne. It's going to be an interesting Canadian Championship this year.
Vaughn and Halifax are playing tonight. I'm 50-50 on whether I'm going to be able to get up to that. It's a very difficult process to get to the Ontario Soccer Center when you don't have a car like I currently do not. So it depends on when I get out of work. But maybe I do have a press pass set up for it, but I will be up for the second leg of the Blainville York next week for sure. And if I don't make that one tonight, then I'll probably be in the field watching Wayne Rooney. So that's kind of a big swing there.
And there's a later on as well at 10:30 p.m. tonight, Pacific versus Cavalry FC, the first all-Canadian Premier League Canadian Championship game tonight. But 7 p.m., Vaughan Azzurri versus the HFX Wanderers in Blainville, and York 9 at 7 p.m. So that's going to be fun. And it's going to be fun to see how Blainville and Vaughan Azzurri react to the Canadian Premier League teams tonight. Blainville, if you don't know, former Montreal Impact player André Lefebvre is a player for AS Blainville. There's a couple of former Montreal Impact player, Papouche Maillard from the early days of the Impact back in the 2010s era. So there's some great soccer and Quebec soccer content with Blainville, and that's going to be fun against York 9 tonight.
No, 100%. And I think that one of the great changes that are going to see in this competition now that is expanded to include these teams and all the Canadian Premier League teams, especially when you consider how much League One Ontario talent and PLSQ talent, hopefully down the line, is ending up in the Canadian Premier League. But these players, not only are they looking at it as a chance to have a giant killing in context, but they're also looking at it as a chance to try out, basically, to show off in front. And if they have a good performance against these Canadian Premier League teams, then there's a chance that they might find themselves with a contract, right?
Well, we saw Omar Brownie for the Impact, who played for Club Atlético Independiente and played against Toronto in the CONCACAF Champions League. And that's how Montreal heard of him, right? It's not the scouts in the middle of Costa Rica on a rainy Tuesday morning in practice. No, it's versus Toronto FC in the CONCACAF Champions League. And I think to a little smaller scale, we'll have the same thing happen in the Canadian Championship, where players from PLSQ teams, player from League One Ontario teams, will want to shine versus Canadian Premier League teams, saying, "Sure, you should have picked me when I came for the trial. You should have picked me. You should have picked me. I'm good." But the same will happen with Canadian Premier League team versus MLS. So it gives a little bit more of the romantic aspect of the magic of the cup, where you see a young player bloom and punch his ticket to glory sometimes in those tournaments.
Yeah, and look, this is really... We saw the Ottawa Fury play Blainville last year in the quarterfinals, they called it. It's very confusing how they format these things sometimes, and it's equally confusing this year. But nonetheless, we have seen one of these matchups before, but this is the first time we're going to consistently see that. I do think that down the line, you may see more of these Division III teams getting into the Canadian Championship. Now, they might start a little bit earlier and be playing each other to get down to the situation, but I think that is ultimately the pathway to a fully open cup, as you have all of these teams in here and maybe even the senior amateur champions if they are still inclined to get there. Now, Canada is a difficult country in terms of travel and things like that, and these games are difficult for them. I mean, Halifax, you know, they're a fully professional team, but it's going to be so they're going to have it paid for, but it's going to be difficult for Vaughn to get out to Halifax. I'm sure they had to, you know, open up the bank a little bit and take some donations and things like that. But that's part of the beauty of it.
Yeah.
We see it in the U.S. Open Cup every year when we inevitably there's teams that have gone deep before that are amateur teams and they have to fundraise and things like that.
Yeah.
There's a team right now that's just beat Charlotte last night that's got high school players on it, fully amateur. So, you know, they might find themselves with a matchup against an MLS team down the line. That's what we like about these cup competitions. And finally, it seems like we might have the same thing up here. Now, you know, we still have questions about the format. I think TFC, you know, I say this as someone from Toronto, I think TFC is getting too great of an advantage in this tournament. They only have to win
three games,
you know, three matches and possibly not even play an MLS opponent until the final. Not even possibly. They won't have to play an MLS opponent to the final. So it's, you know, really, really just beat Montreal or Vancouver in a home and away. It's not really much of a cup run now, is it? But
no.
It is what it is. And we'll watch these early games with interest. And I think that they really will drive this product. And I do believe that we will see a much different product moving forward, especially since we assume there will be at least one or two new teams in this competition by the time next year rolls around. And fun stuff. Always enjoy the Voyageurs Cup. You know, if you're new to listening to us, please call it the Voyageurs Cup. It's the Canadian Championship for the Voyageurs Cup. We'll probably have time down the line to explain that and why that's important.
Yeah, we do it at least once a year. But don't call it the Canada Cup. This ain't 1987. This ain't Coupe Canada. This ain't hockey. This is soccer.
No.
It's called the Voyageurs Cup because as a soccer fan, you have to travel a lot. It's that simple. But speaking of the Voyageurs Cup, which gives a ticket to the CONCACAF Champions League, this year is a bit convoluted. There's going to be a ticket for the CONCACAF Champions League, at least the qualification process given to one of the teams in the Canadian Premier League that were York 9, Cavalry, or FC Edmonton, if I'm not mistaken. One of those three. I could be mistaken.
It's Forge, Winnipeg, and Edmonton. The three teams that were
one of those three
first in the league.
Yeah, the first three teams announced will battle for the first Canadian Premier League qualifying spot for the CONCACAF Champions League. But for the Voyageurs Cup, there's no Club World Cup in 2019-2020. This December, there will not be in the middle of December a competition, a random one in Marrakesh, Japan, or wherever it has been over the last few years. There's going to be a new format next in 2021 when it restarts. So, right now, your Voyageurs Cup, your golden ticket to the CONCACAF Champions League, well, there's no golden ticket after that one. Usually, you could maybe, potentially, beat the Mexican club in a final and punch your way to the tournament to face maybe a Real Madrid, a Barcelona, a Vissel Kobe from Japan. You know, you never know. But no, not this year. Does it change anything? Is it the same? Doesn't really matter if that big carrot is not there at the impossible stick, which we'll never get to in the next 10 years. Anyways, what do you think, Dwayne?
It changes that I don't have to listen to random MLS fans suggesting that the CCL is more important because it provides an opportunity to qualify for this tournament that they never watch and that no one watches.
It's true. It's true. No one watches it.
Look, I love the idea of a Club World Cup. I really do. I am a big proponent of the concept of it. I do think that there should be a cup that is open to any professional team in the world that they could, you know, perceivably go on some kind of dream run to qualify for. It's all up in the air now. In case you don't know, FIFA, at their convention, they decided that they were going to scrap the Confederations Cup, which was the trial event for the World Cup in 2021, and instead replace it with a 2014 Club World Cup, which has always been the vision of FIFA to try and get something that's similar to a proper World Cup for national teams on the club side. This is them wanting to take advantage of what is a massive amount of money and massive amount of attention to the club game. In theory, I would love to see this. I think that if, you know, you had 20 to 24 best teams over a four-year cycle qualifying to to go to a Club World Cup to crown the ultimate club champion, it would be a really fun competition. I just don't know whether it's actually going to happen, because as soon as they announced this, they had immediate pushback. So right now we're in this purgatory situation, Kevin, yeah, where there is no Club World Cup anymore.
And we don't know how it's going to happen.
We don't know how it's going to work or if it's even going to happen. And you know, again, no one's really watching the damn thing right now.
No.
Now, that said, had Toronto, you know, had Marky Delgado hit the open net, I would have watched it this past December.
Let's face it, too. No one watches it, too, because it's not like readily, it's not pushed like a World Cup game is, right? It's not like you'll find it on 2-3 different TV channels and you'll have it on replay. No, it plays at 2 a.m. in the morning on a dodgy stream that you have to look for it to make sure that you can watch Al Hilal versus, I don't know, Monterrey in the semifinal. Yeah, it's yeah, not an easy competition.
That Japanese team that is all the Antlers, Kishima Antlers.
They were good. They almost eliminated Barcelona. Well, no, you never know. And I think that's the aspect that it makes it hard to watch, is just to be aware of it. You have to seek that information. And to watch it even more, you have to seek the stream or seek the info of maybe a stream. And then you're trying to watch it without destroying your computers. I think in the future, like, it's going to be more easily available if they do it the way that we see a World Cup. Okay, example, 24 teams, divide that by 4, it's 8 groups of 4. So you got here, it's 3, sorry. So that would be 6 times 4, 24. I haven't gone to school in about more than 10 years. When can you tell? Hashtag math. So
there you go.
6 groups of 4. Top 2 moves on. 12 teams. The 6. So you can't have a nice bracket World Cup style. You make them play 3 games in a week and then the knockout stage. I think with 24 teams and a Club World Cup, if it is presented in the same way as a World Cup, which is all the teams in the same country or same cities, and you have the games really close by, every 4 days you have the game, I think it can gather momentum, at least a lot more than now.
Potentially. I mean, you have to get buy-in from the players, and the Players Association has already sort of gone, we're not robots. And we had this conversation when they first announce this thing, and then just to repeat it now, it's like, it's just so much fixture congestion. You think about it, like, it'd be starting probably in 3 weeks. So, you know, we just have this intense title races, and, you know, the Premier League and Bundesliga, whatever, and they have a 3-week break and they have to get back at it at the top of the level. And it's, you know, for the European teams, they look at competitions like this and they go, well, we already have a quasi-world championship. It's the UEFA Champions League. So why are we bothering with this? So that, you know, why do we need to put further taxation on our players just so that we can beat up Monterrey?
You know why?
You know, Monterrey.
You know why, Dwayne? Because, well, FIFA doesn't make the money when it's UEFA. When the Champions League, FIFA doesn't see it. It's just UEFA. FIFA wants to see that money. They want to be shown the money.
No, for sure. This is going to be a battle. And I am not entirely convinced that we're ever going to see this thing take off. So the question is whether they move back to the format, which sort of worked. I mean, it did. Ultimately, it was just, you'd have the European team, the South American teams come in at the semifinal stage and have to win, you know, beat one lesser team to hopefully, in the minds of most people that are neutral or watching it, meet each other in the final, which was sort of an extension of way back when they used to have the, you know, an annual, it was in Tokyo usually, an annual competition between the South American champions and the European champions. But the thing is, they're not wrong when they say that the game has evolved to the point that the European champions, back when they were playing the European South American thing, it was a big deal, particularly with the South American teams, and they had a good chance to win it occasionally. Nowadays, it's not so much. We're seeing at the Club World Cup, the South American leagues, they're not even necessarily making the finals anymore. So it's the European game is stretched even further beyond. So, look, I don't know what to think of this thing, because I do appreciate and empathize with the players on this. But as a fan, I'm still, you know, interested in this. This is something I'd set up, you know, on FIFA, right? Play, like, create some super league to play it out. Like,
like a super tournament, yeah. like a Super World Cup. You can call it the Super Club World Cup, whatever. It's probably going to be called that. Anyways, it makes for good marketing when you can use word like super. And yeah, so we'll see. We'll see what the future is, and we'll get a chance to. But I don't think there's any ramification, though. The fact that there's no, I don't think the players even know that there's no Club World Cup.
I don't think Blainville's really worried about the Club World Cup.
Exactly. You know,
I don't taking think, on New York tonight.
I don't think Blainville will be like, yeah, but you know, I was really excited for this competition and this game, but I just learned today, listening to soccer today, that there's no Club World Cup. Jeez, what's the point? I'm staying home, not playing tonight. That won't happen today.
Yeah, this doesn't seem likely. It doesn't seem necessarily like it's going to be their main focus. I think for them, beating New York 9 would be a big enough scalp. They're not really after Juventus quite yet.
It can happen. Blainville is the best team in the PLSQ by far. We'll see. It's one of those games where it's hard to talk about until you watch it because it's unknown. Players don't know each other. The coaches don't know each other. Heck, I don't even think your nine knows how to get to the stadium yet. So,
that they were there today.
Yeah,
no. It's very interesting in that level because I think when we look at this, you look at the amount of players that have graduated from League One Ontario in particular to play and do well at KPL so far. You can't think that these players are that far behind now. The other side of that argument is that they've taken their best players. So
yeah, but the thing is, there's not that many players from the PLSQ that have been taken, right? Blainville is as good as it was last year, if not better. So I do feel there's going to be like, you know what? We were okay in the PLSQ, and our agents or whatever told us to maybe stay put and see how it unfolds. And tonight, if Blainville beats York 9 tonight, and we'll see in the return leg, This could give the PLSQ and maybe Blainville some ambitions that we don't know if they have or not. Be like, you know what? We just played York 9. We won 3-0 at home. A crowd showed up. Maybe that is our future in the world of soccer. Maybe we should try and become a team in the Canadian Premier League. Heck, that's maybe an ideal scenario. We've talked about teams coming, expansion teams in Major League Soccer coming in from the USL and having a little bit of a bump because of the infrastructures they have. The same could be said for a Canadian Premier League team that has history in the PLSQ with a certain amount of player pool, already working with the Soccer Association of Blainville and Beaubriand as well as their partner. So there's already a pyramid there. You just had the top and you got yourself a full pyramid. Tonight could be the first step in that direction for Blainville with a good result too.
Yeah, what's interesting with that tie is that they're playing York 9, which does actually contain a lot of Vaughan grads, and obviously Carm as Vaughan's head coach. So in many ways, this is a repeat of last year's matchup between the PLSQ and League One Ontario, which was won by Blainville at that point, in the years since League One Ontario has existed, they've split it right down the middle when they played the PLSQ. League One got off to a good start, won the first couple. Used to call it the Interleague Cup, and then after that, it's been the Quebec League has been winning. So I think maybe the Quebec League.
It's Blainville. Let's get his act together.
Yeah, fair enough. The very least, I think that if you're Alex Bunbury or whoever else is looking for a team in Montreal, you're probably at that game tonight looking very carefully at the Quebec-based team because you would think that would be, if they didn't bring a team in themselves, at the very least be like a situation like Sigma or like Vaughan, where they have kind of quasi associations with the Canadian Premier League teams, or where they might be able to cooperation there, right?
So
I think this is an interesting thing that way.
Yeah, no, exactly. So tonight I'll be at the Canadian Championship game in Blainville. You can follow me at Kev Larmé for my live coverage of the game, and you can follow Dwayne for his live coverage of his games tonight. And before we move on to our MLS charter flight discussion, which we'll have in a few minutes, there's a few games in Major League Soccer tonight as well. 8 p.m., BMO Field, Toronto FC versus Wayne Rooney and DC United. Houston Dynamo at home, 8:30 p.m. versus Portland. Vancouver at home, once again, 10 p.m. tonight versus Atlanta. I'm looking forward. You know, Dwayne, I have to say, I have been enjoying watching the Whitecaps this year, not because of of on the field or off the field. Nothing with the actual sports. Just the fact that they're always late on my television at night. I'm a night owl. I open my TV at 10 p.m. I get to see the Whitecaps too. Once a week, if not twice. Hey, I'll take it. I love my West Coast games late in the East Coast.
Yeah, no, I've always enjoyed the Friday night games because, you know, after a week of work, I don't really feel like going hard on the town on a Friday night. So
yeah,
it's a perfect little situation to go home and to grab a bottle of pop or a bag of popcorn and watch them laugh. I do enjoy that. I'd be very curious in Toronto tonight to see the attendance. I mean, on one hand, it's the Wayne Rooney game. On the other hand, this is a basketball game involving a Toronto team that starts at 8:30. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. That's the thing. A lot of Toronto FC fans that would usually go to Toronto FC game might be in Maple Leaf Square, just in that crowd outside, just looking at a big telly screen.
Yeah, I would suggest that of all of the major Toronto sports teams, the crossover to TFC the is Raptors, greatest yeah. with the Raptors. So, yeah,
it's the same crowd. It's the same demographic, which is not the case with the Blue Jays or the Maple Leaf, because the Blue Jays and the Maple Leaf, the crowd is very white and very gray, which is not the case with the actual Toronto that you know, that I've visited, or that comes to Toronto FC games, or comes to Raptors games, which is the actual demographic of the city.
Yeah, the Blue Jays are a little younger than you think because of all the condo dollars
cheaper.
There. Although you did hit the other part of that equation pretty well.
Yeah, right? White and gray. White the skin, gray the hair. But yeah, there's even a game tomorrow night. LAFC versus FC Dallas. No Friday night game this week, but that's the games in midweek in Major League Soccer. But Dwayne, speaking of Major League Soccer, we've talked about it a bit yesterday. Don Garber was in Montreal earlier this week, talking about the Montreal market, talking about potential growth of the stadium. Should the stadium be built somewhere else? Should it have ways to be winterized a bit more? Add some finishing touches to that stadium. It's still like it's a permanent stadium that was built in a temporary way with possibilities of growing the stadium, and we've seen it happen once. Before 2012, the original stadium was built in 2008, and now there's only so much you can do with the footprint of the stadium where it is located in a part where nothing's easy to build on the Olympic grounds in Montreal, and there's only so much space that you can augment the size of the stadium, and it might be already at its maximum potential footprint. So eventually, if you think Major League Soccer is going to continue to grow, you might need another stadium situation with, then you can talk about maybe adding heating system underneath the field to have more control on the roots of the grass and have better grass so we don't have the same situation as this year because you can have earlier games. But my point is, those were talked about, but the biggest point that affects everyone in Major League Soccer that Don Garber talked about while in Montreal is the charter flights in Major League Soccer. CBA is up soon, and it's going to be a point of discussion and negotiation. And Don Garber is okay. He wants more charter flights for Major League Soccer teams.
Yeah, you know, quickly on the stadiums, Tad Saputo, I think we both agree, needs to have some improvements in the concourses and things like that. There's no doubt about it. It's a, as you said, a stadium that was built kind of temporarily that has become permanent. But
there's
a lot of charm.
It's a permanent stadium, but it's built as an outdoor stadium. And if you want to be able to use, it wasn't built in the mindset of using it in February and March. And if you want to use it in February, March, and November, you need to invest a lot.
Yeah. Well, you need to, and the concourses, I'll die on that hill. I mean, there's the amenities in that stadium could be improved to increase the revenue flows. There's no doubt about it. There's a lot of charm to the stadium, too. Its sideline's great. It's a fun little place to watch a game. There's no doubt about it. But yeah, there's improvements. But putting that aside, the charters, look, we were saying off air, this is as much, I think, Don Garber's starting to do CBA negotiations in public as it is anything else. He's saying, you know, if you read between the lines yesterday, he was saying he would add some, not that he would make them legal. They're still...
Yeah.
You know, again, how I interpret it, you're still putting restrictions on them at that point, which is utterly ridiculous to me. Why are you putting restrictions on them? Just let, if the owners want to pay for it, let them pay for it.
Well, I think the rules should be a bit different. I think the rule should be in kilometers or miles. I'll explain to you.
Okay.
You shouldn't value the charter for a Toronto to Columbus flight, or that's not a good example because there's no direct flights. Example, you shouldn't count the charter from Montreal to Toronto in the same way that you count a charter from Montreal to Vancouver or from LA to Atlanta. I think there should be a limitation in the distance that if it goes over 1,000 miles journey, your charter flight doesn't count and it's okay to take a charter flight there. Because maybe something in that vein, because the disparity of travels in this league is mind-boggling. You can drive down the road to play NYCFC and then the New York Red Bulls one against each other. And in the same week, you can have a travel to LA. And those travels have to be taken, and not in this, they can't be weighed in the same way in the conversation. That's what I mean, I guess.
No, I follow you. I mean, look, they're all ready to do it end around, as we said before anyway, in terms of the richer teams doing things. But TFC just buys out all the seats on a Porter flight when they're going to Montreal. So it's not a charter, but there's only TFC staff and players on the plane. So really it is, right? Like it's silly, but nonetheless.
I don't think we ever explained that. Sorry, Dwayne, I didn't mean to interrupt, but Joey Saputo used to do the same too. He used to fly with his own plane to go see the games and just have a couple players join him. So technically the entire team is in the coach flight, but Drogba might have been in the jet.
Well, and which is silly. Like you're forcing owners to make it in the fact that, like, it's just silly. It's silly. So silly. Why are you worried about such a petty little thing? To like what? Like, is it really going to have that great of an influence on your beloved parity over the course of the season? No. And if some team's too damn cheap to do it, screw them then. They're going to pay the price if that's the problem. Like, I really have no patience for this one. But nonetheless, it's good that they're open to at least increasing this. The CBA negotiations are going to be, I suspect, frustrating for everyone. I suspect that those who believe very strongly in the worship at the altar of parity are going to be frustrated that the quote-unquote big teams are not going to be reined in as much as they like. And I think those of us that I would count myself in that want this league to be a true market league are going to be very frustrated that we won't be provided with the opportunity to become that as well. It's going to be something in the middle, and it'll be half measures. But at least we have our own league now, which is a little cute little thing that no longer makes me completely focus and lose my mind over stuff like this in the way that I used to.
Yeah, because I could be like, okay, it's okay. I'm not even going to look at it. I'm just going to change my target of vision. I'm just going to change my perspective, and I'm just going to look at this thing here instead. I'm going to look north of D48 and just look at the Canadian Premier League for development. And yeah, it makes it takes a lot of the frustrations out of your soccer watching. You know, it's like in life, you can't change everyone around you. Just change how you look at them. Sometimes that makes a big difference.
I was doing an exercise today, looking at the 2011 USA U17 roster. Bear with me here. It's because someone had said, oh, isn't it amazing that all three teams that will be hosting the World Cup in 2026 qualify for the U17 World Cup? And again, congratulations to Canadian under-17s for something qualified since 2013. U.S. and Mexico, congratulations to you as well, but you do it all the time. So
it's not like it's surprising. It's like, yay, Canada qualified for the Olympic hockey tournament. Yay! Yeah, we always do.
Anyway, 12 of those players from that USA 2011 U17 teams don't play professional soccer anymore. I was thinking to myself as I'm reading this, I think that Canada, with this Canadian Premier League situation, because of its high focus on young players, that those players, at the very least, aren't just going to get lost in 2 years anymore. They're at least going to get a good look in the Canadian Premier League in the next couple years, especially with new teams coming in. And I think that's a wonderful thing. Now, you know, you're still looking at a national team level that any individual U17 cycle at best is going to produce a player. But nonetheless, I think you're going to have a better look at some of these guys, and you might have four or five of them, you know, something close to what that U.S. team did, where there's, well, I guess, eight that are playing professionally still. You might have eight of these Canadian under-17s playing professionally, where in the past it would be like two playing professionally and none at the national team level. So that's another good thing about that.
Yeah, and that percentage of just below 50% of a U17 team playing professional, I think is spot on. not just here, but across the world too. If you look at Mexico's U17 team, well, guess what? The same things happen. Like, there's a big, big gap between 17 and 21. The only big difference is at 17, in other parts of the world, they're already considered fully professional, and they're getting more playing time, thus a better development, thus maybe a better percentage there. But it is what it is. But it does excite me a lot, and we're going to start to wind down the show for today. I think we're going to see a lot of improvement down the road with just confidence of Canada qualifying for those tournaments. And because we are going to see as well a couple of players at that level becoming stars. And if, example, Dwayne, okay, just bear with me here. Your U17 World Cup starts this summer. Canada makes it out of the group. Canada goes into a semifinal. And lo and behold, a surprise. Someone scores a goal when they're not supposed to. And Canada wins and makes it to the final. We don't care if they lose at this point. The guy who scored the winning goal in the semifinal becomes a legend. And he's, what, 17 years old? He's going to get a look no matter what in the Canadian Premier League just because he's a household name at this point. And I think we're going to create those type of stars, local stars, that even though they might not be game changers on the pitch, they're going to draw some people. They're going to become important. That's what I'm really excited to see when we create in the Canadian Premier League and in the Canadian national team level and the youth level stars that eventually get a place to play at home and become even more influential in their community, draw more people to the game, and become a fully fledged professional that would not have been the case maybe in another era. So no, there's a lot of that. And I think your exercise of looking at the U17 U.S. men's national team from a few years ago, 2011, and seeing the result now gives us a good idea of how important it is to have a place to play for players, especially from 17 to 23.
Yeah, well, the biggest difference between them is they have a domestic league, but MLS is not, as much as they claim that it's there to benefit the U.S. men's national team, it really isn't. It's an entertainment product. Yeah. It doesn't benefit the Canadian national team, certainly, but I don't think it necessarily, other than through just by accident, benefit the U.S. national team. They're not set up to give young players a chance. It just simply isn't. It's been a long complaint by MLS observers. Cash Save Play Your Kids is a thing in MLS and in Canadian Premier League, because we don't have those same hang-ups about the league's overall quality. We've said this before. Hashtag Play Your Kids isn't a thing because Play Your Kids is ingrained in the league rules.
They have to.
So these kids will get a look. They will absolutely, like they did in the past, and half of them are not going to make it because they're not going to evolve any further than where they are now. U17 youth roster is as much about physicality and sort of development, physical development, as it is about physical skill. So, yeah.
I think you're right. Physical development is as important as skills development at a certain level. But no, it'll be fascinating, and we'll get more answers to those questions tonight and in the weeks to follow in the Canadian Championship, the Voyagers Cup. And we'll talk about it tomorrow on the Two Solitudes Soccer Podcast for patrons only. $2 a month will give you access to 4 shows a month, once every week, where Dwayne and I break down the Canadian Premier League coverage. We talk about the Canadian Premier League players of the week. And of course, we talk about Canadian soccer as a whole on our exclusive shows for patrons only that you can get access to for $2 a month at patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. For Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie. We'll be back tomorrow. And until then, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.